on ABC Local Radio, Radio Australia and the World Wide Web. This is Sunday Nights with John Cleary.
Hi there and welcome to Sunday Night on ABC Radio. This week across the nation is Gambling Awareness Week. Last week, a newspaper report suggested that one of Australia's major retail chains had also become one of Australia's largest owners of pokie machines. So, just how far have pokies penetrated our social fabric? To what extent do pokie tax revenues fund state services? Have they become, as some suggest, a regressive means of taxation, paid largely by the poor? And what of the anti-gambling lobby? Is it simply a front for killjoy wowserism? Or, as others suggest, has it been seduced by the very forces it wishes to curb? Reduced to softly, softly warnings and recovery programs for victims rather than taking on the agencies that have caused the evils. So what of the victims? What is the real cost of pokies? What limits, if any, should be placed on activities prone to addictive attraction? Well, to discuss these matters, we'll be joined shortly by a panel that includes Senator Nick Xenophon, who has built his political reputation largely through his vigorous opposition to the power of the pokie lobby. Well, last week, newspaper reports suggested that one of Australia's major retail chains had also become one of Australia's largest owner of poker machines. It raises the question, at the outset of this Gambling Awareness Week, of just how far pokies have penetrated into our social fabric. And does it matter? What is the evidence of damage, first to individuals and then to the state? To what extent do pokie tax revenues now fund state services? Have they become, as some suggest, a regressive tax on the poor? Well, Senator Nick Xenophon is one who's campaigned long and loudly on the issues of the damage caused by pokies. In recent years, he's been joined by other politicians, including our Prime Minister Kevin Rudd, in decrying the damage done. But few seem willing to turn off or even curb the revenue spigot. Joining Nick Xenophon in our studio this evening is Paul Bendat of the website Pokey Watch and other things. The Reverend Harry Herbert of the Uniting Church will be joining us shortly, and also the chair of the New South Wales Responsible Gambling Fund. Harry wears more than one hat in this discussion. And in our Melbourne studios, we're joined by Dr. Charles Livingston of the Department of Public Health at Monash University, and joining us from a home in Nowra is Kate Roberts of the Gambling Impact Society of New South Wales. Welcome to you all.
Welcome. Good evening.
Nick Xenophon, you've been campaigning on this issue for some time now. Indeed, it's in some ways your flagship. Why?
I think the impact of poker machines is a litmus test of a good society. And the fact is, this is meant to be a form of entertainment, but it's something that's caused an enormous amount of damage to so many people. We know from the Productivity Commission inquiry back almost 10 years ago, and the commission has been instructed by the Treasurer to produce another report that will be out now early next year, that we're the number one gamblers in the world, biggest rates of problem gambling in the world, upwards of 250,000 people have a problem with poker machines. And I think that you need to look at this in terms of a product that is particularly dangerous. The commission told us back in 1999 that about over 1 in 25 people that have actually ever touched a poker machine develop a problem with them. So I think we need to look at the big picture, that this is something that state governments rake in $4 billion a year in revenue on, and there's enormous social pain, an enormous cost to the community. And when you consider that the research that, that's been carried out over the years, something like 50%, up to 53% of pokies' losses come from people that are hooked and vulnerable. I just think that's a very scary figure, and we need to rein in the damage caused by poker machines.
Charles Livingston, you're a lecturer in public health at Monash University. To what extent is gambling, and in particular the poker machine, a public health issue? Are pokies particularly addictive or likely to attract those prone to addictive behaviour?
Well, they appear to be. 85% or so of the people who have a gambling problem in Australia have it because of the poker machines. It's a public health problem because anything that causes harm to 300,000 people at any one time has to be construed in that way. It is it's an epidemic proportion. And the harms that are associated with pokies are not simple. They're not straightforward. They include complex psychosocial issues. People suffer depression, anxiety, family breakdown, in some extreme cases suicide. Many people end up in jail because of the addiction to pokies, if you want to use that terminology. There is no doubt that the poker machine business is one which causes incredible harm to many people, probably around 300,000 directly in any one year, but the Productivity Commission estimated, and I think they're correct, that somewhere between 5 and 10 other people are affected by anyone who has a problem. You know, if you think about it, family members, employers, you know, acquaintances, friends and so on from whom people steal who are impacted by this sort of behaviour. And it is certainly something. I mean, the interesting thing about the pokies is that it's a problem which is entirely rectifiable by government. I mean, they caused it by legalising poker machines in the first place, and it's something that we can do something about. There's an awful lot of public health stuff we can't do anything about. But here's an issue which is almost certainly soluble by government action.
Kate Roberts, you are one of the organisers of the Gambling Impact Society, but your concerns are wider than the sorts of therapeutic measures designed to help and support individuals affected by gambling. You're concerned about that, but you're concerned on a wider front also.
Oh, absolutely. It's like closing, you know, the stable door once the horse has bolted, treating people after they've already developed problems. And whilst that's incredibly important, and we certainly support that and provide self-help information and support the professionals who provide the clinical services, we really full-heartedly embrace a public health approach, which is very much working back further upstream, you know, catching people before they fall in and drown. And just really to reiterate what Charles is saying is that we really need to embrace this, and this involves the full range of governments involved in this. And at the moment, we believe we've only been tinkering on the edges, which is predominantly focusing, particularly here in New South Wales, on the individual and the individual treatment. And many of the messages around getting help are about seeing it again as a pathology of an individual. And we really feel that we need to look much further behind us, with regards to looking at preventing the problem in the first place. And that will require technological changes and, again, a shift in our social culture in terms of how do we actually embrace gambling or choose to, foreshorten our reliance on it, particularly from a financial revenue gaining proposition. And we certainly know that we've had to take those hard decisions on other issues, for instance, in tobacco control. And similarly, we're looking for those same sorts of measures with regards to gambling.
Harry Herbert of the Uniting Church in New South Wales, welcome. You're also chair of the New South Wales Responsible Gambling Fund, an initiative that's come out of the New South Wales government. Does this risk placing you in a bit of a cleft stick, that is, both with fox and hounds in this issue?
No, John, no, it doesn't, because I'm myself and I say what I think. Yes, I've said for many years we need more dough in New South Wales to address this issue. I mean, the 2% levy on Star City doesn't create the amount of funds that you really need to do the harm prevention that Kate Roberts is talking about. You know, we're doing some public awareness campaigns at the moment through the Responsible Gambling Fund, focusing on young people, 18 to 24, males. That's good, and I support that, but we need a heck of a lot more of that, and more of the industry need to be contributing to that.
But wouldn't it be the case if the gaming industry ever thought that you were having a serious impact, they'd cut off the stream of funds going to the Responsible Gambling Fund as quick as you like? I mean, they're not going to take it if it ever got serious.
Well, first of all, the gambling industry doesn't determine those funds. The funds that we have at the moment are decided by the government, and that's a response to public opinion. And I mean, all the surveys show that people think we've got probably too much gambling. I mean, no one wants to get rid of all gambling. People like
gambling.
Well,
we're focusing particularly on pokies. That seems to what the debate tends to centre on, a particularly addictive form of gambling.
Well, I think most people would say in New South Wales, we allowed too many pokies to be in place. I think every sensible person would agree to that. There is a cap on them at the moment. Probably the cap could be stronger. But nevertheless, supply reduction is an important feature, and I support that.
Nick Xenophon, isn't this a crux issue here, that state governments aren't really going to get serious about limiting supply because they become addicted to the revenue stream that flows to the tax coffers?
John, biggest jackpot junkies in this country are state governments. $4 billion a year revenue stream. And look, I'll take issue with Harry. Sure, great what he's doing, but the key issue here is the fact that the machines are addictive. These machines are the electronic locus of the 21st century. They just strip away people's savings. They strip away communities in terms of what they do, in terms of the revenue that is lost, the money that is lost from people that are hooked on these machines and the consequential impacts of that. Let's target the machines. I'm not sure what the responsible gambling fund is doing to target the actual machines, because these machines are a product that actually causes a lot of harm. They are very clever in the way they're designed. They're the most seductive and an addictive form of gambling. And Paul Bendat, I think, has been doing research on how much money people like aristocrats spend on their R&D.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. Just one question to Charles Livingston while we're on this addictive question. Then, Paul, I'll come to you on the question of machines and how they work. Charles Livingston, this question of the particularity of gaming machines, pokies in particular, what is it about behaviours that causes you particular concern when it comes to a device like a pokey?
A poker machine is an operant conditioning machine. In other words, it uses principles of operant conditioning developed, and indeed classical conditioning, but essentially operant conditioning developed by Skinner in the 1950s to stimulate sort of behaviour through reinforcement, and it is very difficult to extinguish that. And the reason why they're so good at it is because they're very quick. You can roll a poker machine every couple of seconds readily, and every couple of seconds you can bet up to, say, $10 in New South Wales on one spin of the machine. So you can do the sums for yourself. It's very easy to become attenuated to the machine, to want to keep playing it because of this conditioning, which is, you know, very carefully designed into the game maths of the machine. I mean, the industry sort of likes to deny that they use reinforcement, but that is clearly what it is. It's a reinforcement schedule which has been cleverly designed over many years. Aristocrat, as I understand it, spent $104, which is a large Australian poker machine manufacturer, spent $104 million in 2006-07 on its R&D. And, you know, they spend this money making machines which are very attractive to particular market segments. So if you walk into any gaming room in the country, you'll see lots and lots of different machines on every gaming room floor. And the reason for that is they want to have a machine that suits every style of gambler. So, you know, there are some people who like to sort of lose their money over a period of time. There are some people who like to take, you know, quote-unquote big risks. And so on and so forth. So they have machines which are designed to attract every market segment, from grannies to young men, and they work very hard and very tirelessly at making these things as attractive as possible to those people, because they want to maximise the amount of time and money people spend on the devices. There's no question that the manufacturers put an enormous amount of effort into this. And then, you know, at the venue level itself, there are technologies associated with what it looks like, what it smells like, what it sounds like, you know, how long it's open, where it's located, and all the rest of it. So, you know, there's a vast array of technology being deployed to hook some, you know, unsuspecting punter into becoming more or less completely addicted to these things until they wake up one morning and the house is gone and their family's gone with it.
Paul Bendat, we'll bring you into the discussion here. We just, on the way, we should mention that Charles Livingston there mentioned B.F. Skinner and operant conditioning. B.F. Skinner, the American psychologist who back in the 50s and the 60s developed the sort of rats in maze type experiments, which showed so much of how much of our behaviour at a base level is determined by things beyond our control, or even our instinctive appetites for things are more of a mystery to us than we'd care to understand. Paul Bendat, let's talk about the way Aristocrat and other companies operate. Charles Livingston's given us some insight there into the psychology of it. The business model flows directly out of the psychology, I take it.
I would guess so. I've got to say I'm not an expert on Aristocrat and their business methodology.
We should say, Paul, just to put you in context here, because I've given a sort of description of most people, you're one of those who's been very active in this area because you've actually not only sort of got into the website area with PokeWatch and PokeAct, but you're one of those who, with Nick and Tim Costello of World Vision, have launched a book called PokeAct.org, The Campaign to Make Pokey Places Kid-Free. Take it away from that position. Why your concern, and what particularly are the concerns that you have?
Well, firstly, I was introduced to this issue as a result of going to a Woolworths annual general meeting where Michael Luscombe, the CEO, said it was their intention to turn their pokey pubs into, quote-unquote, centers of family entertainment. Poker machine gambling, pokey gambling, is not a family entertainment. It is a harmful form of adult entertainment and should be regarded as such. The book, particularly Pokey Act, is devoted to saying, look at what's happening in terms of bringing kids into these pokey places, exposing them to the sounds and sights of the pokies. And unfortunately, it goes very close to home. I was looked at some of the leagues clubs today here in Sydney, and one of the ones is Burwood, which has play schools concerts where kids are taken upstairs past pokies into a function room sponsored by the Australian Broadcasting Corporation.
I'll write that down for immediate concern. That you does know, take
so, and it just says that this, what I call a disease, has gone through much greater parts of the society where this activity, this adult activity of poker machine gambling, is seen as a normal part of your life. It normalizes this activity. It's the same as watching your parents smoke. You're more likely to become a smoker or a drinker.
Normalization of activity is a critical one here. Harry Herbert, to what extent do you think organizations like churches and other anti-gambling campaigning bodies are at risk of being suborned or seduced or led in by saying, look, you can come in and you can now be part of those who advise us how to deal with this problem? And so, in a sense, you get corralled.
John, that sounds like a question to me personally, doesn't it? That was a cleverly put question. Well, no, I don't think I've been suborned, all right? I mean, gambling has been a part of human life for a very long time. There'll always be gambling. Poker machines may be the worst end of gambling, but even poker machines, huge percentage of people do use poker machines and it doesn't seriously affect them. We've got them, and we need to make sure that the harm that they release on the community is the least harm. Now, I mean, I think Nick Xenophon's a good guy, but I'm not going to say that we can get rid of poker machines in Australia. I mean, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people in New South Wales play poker machines. Can anyone seriously think that the New South Wales government is going to come along one day and say, right, we're going to get rid of all these poker machines? I'm more interested in limiting the harm of poker machines than indulging in a sort of fantasy that they're all going to go away tomorrow.
Nick Xenophon, and then a response from Kate Roberts.
Well, look, Harry, your glibness astounds me. The fact is, we've seen a situation where poker machine losses or gambling losses in this country doubled from 1992 to 1997, and then they've gone up another $6 billion, so $16 billion a year, most of that on poker machines. And we have a situation where the pokies that were in New South Wales clubs 30, 40, 50 years ago are nothing like the poker machines today. This is about a product that is incredibly addictive, that is very dangerous, that causes an enormous amount of harm. Now, one in 25 people that have ever touched a poker machine develop a gambling problem, according to the Productivity Commission. Now, could you imagine a restaurant where one in 25 customers got food poisoning, one in 250 customers got food poisoning, or one in 2,500 customers got food poisoning? The health department would close them down until they got their act together. And this is what the focus is about. This is an industry that causes enormous harm. And just last week, an inquest was opened, and in fact I'll be arguing in court next week in Adelaide to reopen this inquest into the death of a young woman, a young mother, who was addicted to poker machines. And I don't know of any other form of entertainment where that, where people actually kill themselves as a result of being of a so-called entertainment product.
Nick, do you think poker machines should be totally banned?
On my tombstone, it'll say that I was the no pokies MP or the no pokies senator. That, of course, is what I believe ought to be done, because this machines, the business model for this industry relies on so many people being hooked in it, because so much of the revenue comes from people that are hooked. But there's a whole range of things we can do to make the product much less dangerous, and I like to think there's a lot of common ground with Harry on that.
Kate Roberts, your observations.
Yes, I'd have to agree with the statements about the changes that have occurred in the technology over the last 20 years, that the poker machines that we have on our street corners these days are nothing like those original forms of entertainment. And I think it is highly suspicious that we put a product that will take $1,000 an hour off you and call that entertainment. Obviously, some of my origins are from Britain, and they've taken one look at our poker machines recently and said, not on your Nelly, we're not having them on our street corners. They're putting them into their casinos, and they will not have these high-intensity machines on the streets. And I think we have to grasp that nettle and look at changing the technology, so that if we want to have that level of high intensity, then we need to move it away into safer environments that are not so available and certainly not available to young people, and that we need to change the technology to make it safer for people to play at a much lower intensity, and provide information about the risks of play and how to play safely if you're going to indulge in this, and also look at what the New Zealanders have been looking at in terms of the seat belts and airbags equivalents that we've done on our cars. We need to be looking at those strategies. And there are some very good technical strategies that we know both globally and also that we're carrying on research in Australia at this current time about looking at those sorts of changes. And we need to grasp those in New South Wales, because after all, we're the state with the highest number of machines, with the highest number of problems. We should be taking some leadership in that, and we are certainly not.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia and via the web to the world. John Cleary with you. 1-300-800-222 is a number to call if you want to get into the act. 1-300-800-222. Do give us a call. Express your opinions on poker machines and whether governments are cowards or really more prone to be addicts themselves on this issue. What do you think of pokies in Australia? Is it much ado about nought, or something that is a vital concern to all of us on this Gambling Awareness Week? We're joined in the studios this evening by Nick Xenophon, Harry Herbert, Professor Dr. Charles Livingston, and Kate Roberts. And you, 1-300-800-222. Paul Bendat is also our guest in the studio, and Paul is one of those who's taken an active interest. Paul, I'd like to come to you now, because it seems to me that we've had an example here with a little sort of contretemps there between Harry and Nick, of the sorts of difficulties faced by lobby groups, where lobbying groups may in fact have slightly different aims in mind, and these can be exploited by the industry. I'll give you an example. This week there have been several stories which seem to place elements of the anti-gambling agencies or coalitions at odds with each other. For example, there's a criticism that you, Paul Bendat, have family links to the casinos in Western Australia. There's another article that suggests that Tim Costello had a bit of egg on his face when he took money, or World Vision were offered money from clubs New South Wales with the tsunami and then knocked it back, and then later on when they rechanged their mind and wanted to take some, it had gone to another agency. So nobody's got clean hands in this week. There's another story that suggests that the Salvos, their anti-gambling positions compromised because they had the head of Woolworths on their advisory board. Now it's revealed that Woolworths are one of the Australia's major owners of gaming machines. Isn't there a risk that those who want to oppose gaming machines risk being sort of divided, the divide and conquer routine takes over, and that groups that are prone to this themselves, as we've seen in the studio tonight?
On a superficial level, there's risks. On a more meaningful level, there are more things in common that people have, and there is nothing wrong with a diversity of ways to get to that common objective. For my own part, I've been working with Clubs Victoria in terms of the gambling bill that's being introduced, because it allows for concentration of ownership in the hands of those who are well-financed and already in the pokie business, i.e. Woolworths, who, by the way, are the largest operators of poker machines in Australia with over 11,000 machines. There is nothing wrong with healthy discussion. For example, I disagree with our Christian task force in Victoria, who are endorsing the line, gamble for the fun of it. I don't think that that language should be in any gambling responsibility message, and I say that very vociferously. On the other hand, there is a lot of good things, and they still need to be talking to government so that we can move forward. There's nothing wrong in saying, hey, that little part of it, gamble for the fun of it, I don't care whatever the context is, don't do that thing, and still keep talking to people.
Charles Livingston.
Well, I mean, you know, it's easy to sort of point the finger at people and say that, you know, Tim Costello's organisation took money or whatever. I mean, the reality is that everybody who touches poker machine money ends up having a problem with it. And I think, you know, for example, I mean, there's a lot of debate at the moment in the alcohol research industry about whether or not people should take money from some of the industry organisations that have been established for that purpose. Similarly, way back when tobacco was, battling to maintain its profile, the tobacco industry established all sorts of front groups and organisations to divide and conquer amongst those who were concerned about the issue. So, you know, the industry, I think, needs to be scrutinised for this sort of behaviour, because really what they're trying to do is maintain, I would argue, for as long as possible, their status quo. I mean, at the moment, the gambling operators have what amounts to a licence to print money, and of course they will do anything they can to maintain that. Now, you know, suggesting that various people that have got issues with the gambling industry are somehow soiled because they have some family connection or because their organisational connection is this, that or the other, I mean, it is ludicrous. It is diverting attention from the main issue, which is that in the case of poker machines, the product is very harmful. We know what we can need to do, really, to make it less harmful, but making it less harmful means that perhaps half of the revenue will disappear. Now, no one who's, you know, sitting on a gold mine is going to want to see half of that gold mine disappear, even if by doing so you maintain a much more ethical position. So, you know, I mean, the real villains in this piece, if I may be so bold as to say it, are those who are making most of the money out of it and who want to preserve that flow of revenue. I mean, that's what it boils down to. It's as simple as that, I think.
You're on Sunday Night on ABC Radio around Australia. We're talking about gambling on this Gambling Awareness Week, particularly the pokie machines. Lots of calls on the board. The first one we have up this evening, Major Brad House from the Salvation Army in Victoria. And Brad House also sits on the Victorian Ministerial Council for Responsible Gambling. Brad, thanks for joining us.
Yes, good evening, John. Thanks for the opportunity.
Brad, there are two issues that have come up. You sit on the Ministerial Council for Responsible Gambling. What about this phrase, gambling for the fun of it? Is that something that the Interchurch Gambling Committee supports or agrees with?
If the phrase was just that on its own, then no, we wouldn't approve that as the key message out of the Responsible Gambling Awareness Week, which comes up in a couple of weeks' time. And I respectfully disagree with Mr. Bendat that context is not important. The rest of that phrase is gamble for the fun of it, not for the money. And the other two or three key messages coming out in that week are about harm minimisation, about setting limits, about not chasing losses and those types of things. So, we don't think for a moment that the key message coming out of Responsible Gambling Awareness Week is gamble for the fun of it.
What about the other observation that's been made that the Salvos are in a difficult position because Woolworths this week are revealed as the largest owners of pokies in the country, and you have associations with Woolworths via your advisory board and those who sit on it?
Yes, and I've heard the commentary tonight from Charles and others, and look... It mainly focuses this particular debate about Mr. Roger Corbett, who does chair our Sydney Advisory Board. He's no longer with Woolworths, although he consults back to them. But I think you really have to divorce his previous business alliance. I do agree that from the reality that he comes to us, he offers himself in terms of his expertise and his business acumen and wants to be able to offer advice, not management, to the Salvation Army's leadership. But that needs to be taken as something that the vast majority of not-for-profit organisations and charitable groups do as good management in this country.
The Salvation Army, one of those groups who's been known for many years for dealing with the casualties of gambling, drug addiction, alcohol addiction and other things. This role of advocacy of that is fighting against the very principles itself. Are you equally committed to that?
Absolutely, and certainly I speak in what we refer to as the Southern Territory of the Salvation Army, basically the southern half of Australia. Our official position in terms of pokies is that we would much prefer there to be no pokies, whether it's in Victoria or South Australia or Tasmania. That's our official position. But we also acknowledge we live in the world of real politics, and unfortunately, as others have said, governments are hugely reliant on this, and we would agree with what both Nick and Charles have said in terms of they seem to be addicted to it. So we're working in that real world, and so we try and on the one hand put our ideal that Victoria and other states would be better without any pokie machines, but they're a reality at the moment. Let's try and minimise the number of people who are terribly addicted and therefore cut the huge social cost to the community.
Harry, you want to...
Well, just let me say this. The Uniting Church Investments Committee, of which I'm the chairperson, we divested our shares in Woolworths for the very reason that they are large pokey owners. So I mean, I'm not for poker machines or for gambling. I'm just trying to deal with the impact of it as the chairman of the Responsible Gambling Fund. But, I mean, Brad's in the same boat that I'm in. You do have to live in the real world. And I think a few statistics are being flying around tonight, which are, you know, 50% of the income comes from problem gamblers. Well, the Productivity Commission 10 years ago said 30%.
The Productivity Commission said 42%.
42.3%, table 5.7. It's tattooed on my memory, so let's get
that
right.
Well, it's not 50%,
John. No.
People, and
subsequent reports say that it's over 50%.
We're having another look this year anyway, aren't we?
Yeah. It's very easy to play around with figures. And prevalence survey that we did in New South Wales, the Responsible Gambling Fund, showed that 0.8% of the population were problem gamblers, plus another percentage were liable to be problem gamblers. So it's not everybody that plays poker machines that has a problem with them. Let's remember that.
Brad House, final word before we have to move on. Let you go.
Yeah, look, it is a complex debate on the one hand, and at the moment we believe the best way forward is to really strongly advocate for harm minimisation, and in this state we're trying to play a significant role in influencing the legislation that's in the upper house at the moment here to try and get strong pre-commitment measures in. Hasn't come into the debate yet, but others, be it Charles or others, might like to talk about that. We think on an international basis, research has shown that very strong pre-commitment mechanisms can have a very significant impact in reducing addictive gambling, so we'd like to see that at least come into play in a very real and strong way here in Victoria.
Brad House from the Salvation Army, thanks for joining us. Paul Bundat, we do have an issue where the Upper House in Victoria has been kicking this issue around, and it looks like the debate's going to be held over till the next session. There are several critical issues here. I notice you sort of raising your eyebrows once or twice.
Well, with the greatest respect to Brad Halse, he should have been reading the Hansard and Greg Barber's very, very long dissertation on pre-commitment, and he has been single-handedly pushing that issue in the Victorian Parliament and doing a very wonderful job of it. He's really brought this issue to a forefront. One of the things that I really do want to bring out, because I've heard this thing about a low percentage, and this is really bad statistics, bad argument. The Productivity Commission, which we've all been citing here as a definitive authority on this, said in, and we're talking December 2008, whether the actual number of problem gamblers is 1, 2, or 3% of the population, it equates to hundreds of thousands of Australians, with many more that are directly affected by their problems or at risk. It is generally accepted that the precise numbers have little bearing on the need for effective policy action. That's where we should be headed instead of arguing about the numbers. Even in Victoria, it's somewhere between 50 and 100,000 people.
We have online Peter Beamish, who's a councillor with Centrecare, the Catholic Social Services Agency. Hello, Peter. What would you like to say?
Yeah, good evening, John. It's very good to hear this lively debate about this whole issue. What's being lost here is what's happening to all these families, what's happening to this 0.08% or this 2% or whatever. And there is a lot of heartache out there and a lot of people trapped in this addiction of gambling. And that's what the major concern is here. And I would suggest it wouldn't take a great deal of effort on behalf of the industry involved to put in place parts to the machinery that would stop people from gambling in excess and limit their amount of gambling when they do it. We need to remove the ATMs from poker machine venues. We need to be telling people that we need to have responsible serving of gambling the same as we have responsible serving of alcohol. These are active things that need to be happening. We have 10% of the world's poker machines in New South Wales. We have a government that gets $1.6 billion from it. We need to be doing something, and we need to be doing it now and not just talking about it.
Kate Roberts.
Yes, I'd certainly reiterate Peter's comments there. The families often get lost in this debate, and as we've already heard, you know, between 5 and 10 other people are affected. And just to look at, there's very little research that's been done actually on families, that those that have looked into it, is that, for instance, spouses, 84% of spouses consider themselves emotionally ill dealing with the impact of someone else's gambling on their lives. 47% of them are depressed, 14% having suicidal thoughts. Isolation, guilt, anger, helplessness and ineffective parenting are all the kinds of impacts that families are dealing with as we talk. And really, I guess the irony in this is that we really do fail to address those issues, and really, until we embrace it and consider it a mainstream public health issue, then those people are going to continue to fall through the net.
Let's go to Simon in Victoria. Hello, Simon. Welcome. What would you like to say? Simon?
I'd like to say that I think we're starting to become a nanny state, and people have the right to spend their money as they wish. And I think, I mean, I don't hear anyone jumping up and down about obesity and all the fast food chains that are selling food that are killing people and giving them diabetes and all these other diseases, which is costing billions. And I'm sure the figure is far greater than 200,000-300,000 that you're quoting for people losing money in gambling. So I kind of think that, you know, if you eat junk food, that means you made a choice. And I think the people that are going and losing all their money, it's a choice that they've made, and no one's put a gun to their heads.
Dr. Charles Livingston, your response on that. We're living in a free society. This is just a free choice made by free agents.
Yes, well, I don't know what your caller is saying when he doesn't see anyone jumping up and down about obesity. I think it's about, you know, there's certainly a lot of effort being gone into that in the recent past. And I think for exactly the same reason that we're concerned about the pokies, which is that it is something about which we need to act. People who play poker machines frequently find themselves in a position where they become preoccupied and essentially, as you've pointed out, addicted to the machine. It's like, you know, for some people it appears to have the effect that alcohol or other drugs have on some other members of the community. Now, you know, it is poker machines in particular that do this, and they do it, in my opinion, because of the conditioning principles that they utilise, together with the environmental and other marketing factors which are heavily constructed towards making people become dependent on these devices.
So now, it's not a free society. It's not a free choice.
It's not a free choice issue. I mean, if you have it, let's hypothesise and say if indeed the poker machine acts on some people the way a drug does, should we let it rip or should we regulate it? I mean, you know, there's various sorts of regulation in our society about addictive substances. Some of them are highly illegal, some of them are constrained in their use and all the rest of it. And I would argue that poker machines should be in that category. It's not a question of free choice. It's a question of a clever, highly resourced marketing tool which at its pointy end has a device which clearly has the capacity to alter the agency of some individuals and make them dependent upon that device.
Richard in Hurstville is on the line. Richard, hi, what would you like to say?
Well, I'd like to pick up on some of those suggestions. I think the solution is electronic. I think there should be a system where all poker machine gamblers have a card. That is to say, possibly excluding the 1 cent of spin machines, or possibly even 5 cents, to make it reasonable. They have to apply for the card, and then they put in so much money for a certain period by agreement. This can put a constraint on the amount they lose. Firstly, they may put a constraint on themselves. Like they may agree, oh, I shouldn't lose more than $100 in the next week. So if they go for that, and then they go over the $100 within the week, the machines just say no, the card doesn't work. But secondly, in their application, they'd have to say, have they got any dependents? Possibly, are they married and living with their spouse? Are they a carer? And these details can be checked out to see whether the Department of Community Services does have a problem with them. And possibly Centrelink could check them out and veto it.
Remedies. Nick Xenophon, we haven't talked about remedies yet.
Well, Richard from Hurstville is right. Back in 2005, the Independent Gambling Authority in South Australia released a report. I actually moved for it in the State Parliament that they produced this report about smart card technology. And back then, almost 4 years ago, the authority found that the technology was already there to operate poker machines only by using this form of technology. And I'm not sure what Charles and others say about that, but I think that's the last best hope, short of getting rid of machines, to actually make a significant impact on the level of addiction from poker machines. If you have appropriate smart card technology, you can pre-commit, you can be barred more easily if you've got a problem. I think that's where it is, but I think the industry will resist that, as will governments, because they'll actually see a real drop in their revenue, because if whether it's 40 or 50%, percent being lost from problem gamblers, it will make a big impact.
Yes, and ultimately, Harry, governments don't want to see a diminution in their revenue, do they?
I'm not sure that it's quite that simple, John. I'm not sure. I think governments would be. I mean, when the smoking ban was brought in this year, there was a big diminution in gambling in New South Wales, which I welcomed. And all the people in government that I spoke to welcomed it. I mean, it's starting to creep back up again. But I don't think it's as simple as that. If there are technological answers, and I think with Nick there are some, yeah, they ought to be examined, and I would support their introduction.
Another couple of calls before we have a final round of discussion on this evening. Let's say hi to Nina in Terrigal in New South Wales. Hello, Nina. Welcome. What would you like to say?
Hello there. I'm a taxi driver on the Central Coast, and I see firsthand the lengths people will go to sometimes to actually find a poker machine of a night time. You know, they'll pay hundreds of dollars just to get taxis to go where there's a place that's open where they can play. And, further to that, what I was really, that's just one thing, but, I mean, further to that, what I really meant to say was that, poker machines, I appreciate that they probably return a great deal of money per square meterage when in use, but realistically, they're a very insular activity. They're not social, you know, and it seems to me, you know, clearly I've got an English background and I am used really to going to, a pub or a venue of some sort to socialise. So we have a league for this and a league for darts and a league for pool and a league for quiz, say, trivia things and a league for everything, you know, which means that in theory, every night of the week you could be out socialising with other leagues or, you know, with other league teams, and you have home and away matches, so you get to know people in the area and it's social and it's constructive. And you know, you basically get a greater understanding of other parts of the area and other people, and it's social and it's friendly. And, I don't know. I find that really very nice. And not everybody can go around playing in rugby leagues or sporting leagues as such. But, you know, there probably are people who would be quite keen to get into a regular social league activity. And I think poker machines in these venues Yeah, by all means, have some, but don't have the amount they do. It's just lazy marketing. Leagues and things like that might require some organisation. You know, you might have to coordinate things. You might have to cater them to some extent or something like that. But nevertheless, it does bring fresh people through the door. Yes. It gives you a chance to present your venue. It's friendly. It creates more friendly social connections rather than all the fights that you see. And I don't understand why, you know, you go to a pub, you've got gambling, you've got the tab, you've got the poker machines, you've got drinking. I mean,
yes, how many more do we need? Nina, we'll have to wind you up there. Just picking up that point, Charles, I guess this is a point to you, Dr. Charles Livingston, that poker machines are not only addictive, they are socially isolating.
They certainly are, and most of the people that I've spoken to, who have had a problem with gambling on poker machines talk about getting lost in what they call the zone, which is this space occupied simply by them and the machine. And unfortunately for many people, that becomes all they want, all they desire. So they're certainly not social creatures. They are, you know, portrayed as providing people with harmless fun. But, you know, on the other hand, it's rarely that you can find harmless fun that can cost you, as I think Kate said earlier, $1,000 an hour, or where you can load $10,000 into a machine, which is supposed to be providing you with, you know, a little bit of divertisement.
Let's have a look finally at the way in which we can deal with this. We've talked about local initiatives. We've talked about the need for ways in which pokies can be regulated. But Nick Xenophon, ultimately, state governments have the control here. You're in the federal parliament. What can federal legislation do in this arena?
The reason I left state politics to run for the Senate was because, given the statements of Kevin Rudd, given the statements of Peter Costello when he was then treasurer, the Commonwealth clearly has the power to intervene. We know from the High Court's work choices decision that using the corporation's power and the whole range of other powers, taxation powers, the banking and telecommunications powers, you could get rid of ATMs. You could enforce smart card technology. You could put different taxation on machines depending on how addictive they were. There's a whole range of things that could be done, because I think that the Commonwealth clearly has a role here, because the states are just tinkering around the edges while people's lives are being destroyed.
Kate Roberts, would the Gambling Impact Society of New South Wales support that sort of federal initiative?
Oh, we believe it's probably the only way forward. There needs to be some federal leadership on this, for the very points that Nick has made, is that state governments have really are too close to the issue and too many vested interests with major political influence in the states. And, you know, as far back as 2004, people were calling academically for some leadership in this. We certainly hope that our Prime Minister will stand by his word in terms of taking that stand.
Harry Herbert, your response.
Oh, well, I think pokies are a pest. It's a question of how you deal with them and how you get rid of them. And governments respond to the voters. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of people in New South Wales belong to clubs.
Is this the sort of thing that could come up the Uniting Church Assembly, for instance? It's National Assembly in July, and you could say, well, look, we call upon the federal government to take action on this?
Well, it could, John. I don't even go to the National Assembly of the Uniting Church. I've got better things to do. So much for that. But, I mean, let's not forget also that if we get rid of all the pokies tomorrow, and I'd be as happy as anyone if that was the case, everyone will be on their computers. There'll be internet gambling. Will increase. So there's a lot of.
Oh, Harry, come on.
There's.
You can't say that, Harry.
There's a lot of other avenues for people to gamble, and you know, internet gambling is on the rise, and that's what'll happen. And let's not think we can go back to the good old days when the crims ran the gambling. As bad as governments are, they're better than the crims.
And Paul Bendad, just finally, your book this week, PokieAct.org, is obviously focused on this concern about kids being dragged into the process.
And with Senator Nick, tomorrow we're launching a new feature of the website where people can tell their stories of pain about their own pokey problems.
And that website is PokieAct.org.
PokieAct.org.
Thank you all for joining us. Nick Xenophon, Harry Herbert, Dr. Charles Livingston, Kate Roberts, Paul Bendat, it's been great to have you all in the studios, giving us your chance to, the chance to get it to the public this evening. And if you'd like to pick up this discussion, you can in our chat room in a couple of hours' time, 1300 800 222, on ABC Radio around Australia. And if you'd also like to get on to places where you can go for help, we'll put them up on our website on Sunday night.